case is the Ragland case. And Mr. Katz, I believe you're on board for that as well. And Mr. Oblon?
Oblon.
Okay, yes. Thank you. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. I'm David Oblon from Albo and Oblon in Arlington. Occasionally I get lost and wind up in the Shenandoah Valley, which is not so bad because it's very nice here.
Well, it's a beautiful drive, though, isn't
it?
It certainly is. May I ask you, would you like to reserve some time for rebuttal?
Your Honor, could I say 5 minutes?
Certainly.
Thank you. May it please the Court?
You may.
My client was convicted of bringing a cell phone into a jail. He was on work release, and returning on one of his work release, he was sneaking something in. He was clearly sneaking the telephone. Question before the Court in the assignment of error is, what's the meaning of cellular phone?
As I understand, there's two assignments there. One is, what's a cellular phone? And the other is, what's the definition of in or out of a jail?
Correct. Okay. And then I got a third assignment of error, which doesn't seem to be really hot dispute. It's whether there's weight,
the admissibility of the judicial notice issues.
The government's not really conceding it on the merits. They're just saying it's a harmless error if it's an error. But I just want to just briefly touch on that one because the court would be doing a great service if you adopted the reasoning in Williams v. Long that I cited in my brief and Federal Rule of Evidence 902B because a lot of times
Let me interrupt you just because I want to make sure I understand the focus of that issue.
Yeah.
At the time, the statute has since been amended since this offense occurred, and at the time, the words or other wireless transmission device was not in the statute. It simply prohibited the bringing of a cellular phone into a correctional facility, correct?
Correct.
And that's what your client was charged under. So the narrow issue was simply, did he violate that by bringing a cellular phone into a correctional facility? And there's no dispute that this was a correctional facility.
Correct.
The question is, was it in or out of it, and was the device he had a cellular telephone?
Correct. Those are the two substantive.
Right. And the evidence that was proffered that the trial court refused to take judicial notice of was your effort to get before it some information from the Federal Communications Commission website.
That's right.
Regarding other types of wireless communication devices, correct?
That's correct.
The technology involved in those devices.
Yeah, and I did get in some evidence.
In terms of analyzing whether it was error in the first place, whether it was harmless error, the court doesn't need to take judicial notice of it just because someone asked for it. It's got to be relevant to something, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Was, in fact, a cellular phone in the first place and met the definition of a cellular phone, the court wasn't required to take judicial notice of anything, correct?
No, because at the time it was being offered, the court was deliberating whether it is a cellular phone or not. And this is evidence that seems to suggest that there is other technology out there that looks a lot like cellular, but it's not.
Would you agree that the General Assembly didn't include a specific definition of cellular telephone in the statute?
They did not.
So we look to the ordinary dictionary definition, if you will. Well, Oxford defines a cellular telephone as a, quote, a telephone with access to a cellular radio system so it can be viewed over a wide area without a physical connection to a network, also called a mobile phone. That's Oxford's dictionary definition.
Yeah.
Given that, why can't a fact finder, based on the representations of the witnesses that refer to this device as a cellular phone, and on the, I gather the phone itself was not actually introduced into evidence, but pictures of it were.
That's right.
And so the pictures are clear, it seems to me. I don't think I have it on me back in chambers, but I mean, I don't necessarily need to know what the technology is behind it to look at it and say, oh, that's a wireless communication device that lets me make phone calls, essentially, which is what the definition of a cellular phone is. If that's the case, why does the court need any information from the FCC to make that determination?
Well, Judge Hunchbury, I disagree with the way you've read the definition, and here's why.
You disagree with the definition?
The way you've interpreted the definition.
Well, I just read what the dictionary says.
And then you extrapolate it, of course. You mentioned in the definition that it's a cellular. It says cellular in the definition.
Access to a cellular radio system so it can be used over a wide area without a physical connection to a network.
Correct. My evidence, the FCC evidence that was denied, shows that there is other technology very similar to cellular that's not cellular. And you referenced, you know, your own phone. I mean, I've got one right here.
It might be our phone before the day is out.
As you're looking at this, I'll put it away. As you were previously looking at something, which I may or may not have had, you don't know the technology behind it. It
but
could have been a Wi-Fi
know.
Only phone.
I can look at this picture, and a judge can look at this picture.
Yeah.
It shows that this phone is connected to the Verizon network. Now, I've watched enough of the Can You Hear Me Now commercials to know that the Verizon network is a wireless cellular network. Why isn't that? I mean, the judge doesn't check his common sense when he goes on the bench. Why can't you just look at that?
Only appellate judges do that.
And say that's a cell phone.
Well, you can't do that for the same reason you can't look at a bag of cocaine, a photograph of a bag of cocaine, and say, hey, I'm a police officer. I've been doing cocaine busts for 20 years. This looks like cocaine. Here's a photo of it. It's a white powder.
If
that's the ruling.
This device right here has Verizon on it. It's actually a hotspot.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a cellular phone. I know it's not a cellular phone. I can't make calls on it. I can't talk to anybody on it. It would meet your definition, I'm sure, from whatever the FCC has to say of a wireless communication device. It's not a cellular phone. But as Judge Petty just pointed out, mm-hmm. you know, people can look at things without needing to know all the technology behind it and recognize it as that's a phone versus a duck or a phone versus an automobile or a phone versus a walkie-talkie, if you will.
But, Judge Humphreys, it's not quite that simple, and here's why. Let's say a law prohibits possession of an electric car. If you see a photograph of a motor vehicle, you don't necessarily know from that photograph whether that car is electric or gas-powered any more than looking
at Tesla on the back of it. I think it's probably electric. I can't afford one, but that's.
But what if it says Nissan? You know, I mean, there's gas Nissans and there's electric Nissans. And so the point is that prosecution for all sorts of crimes, and certainly drug crimes, will be very, very easy if the Commonwealth can just offer a photograph and says it looks like one. It looks like illegal drugs. And that's really what's happening here. I've got a photograph, says this looks like a phone, and it may or may not be. And I offered evidence to show that there are a lot of computer technologies.
Your evidence was designed to demonstrate that it wasn't a phone. Mm-hmm. Your evidence was offered to show that there are other devices out there that are not cellular phones, as I understand it.
Correct, and that the evidence the government offered could have been a cellular phone, or it could have been something else. They didn't prove it, and there was no evidence before the court. The court could rely upon any more than the bag of cocaine.
The evidence from the FCC website did not establish that. It only established at best that there's other technology out there. Not that the phone or the pictures that were introduced into evidence of the device that had been referred to by both your client and I think the deputy as a cellular phone or as a cell phone.
Correct. I put on no evidence to suggest that the item in the photograph was a satellite phone, for example. I was just arguing that there's other.
But aside from the fact that everybody refers to it as a cell phone can be considered by the fact finder,
yeah.
The fact that you want to proffer evidence that there exists other technology out there, I don't know how that's necessarily relevant to the point of reversible error for the trial court to refuse to consider it if it doesn't go to whether or not this particular device that has been offered as Commonwealth's Exhibit Number 1 or whatever it was is not actually a cell phone.
Yeah, but taking Judge Petty's question, I mean, he said that if you see a car, you know what a car is. I don't need an expert witness to tell me what a car is until I just mentioned the possibility that there's electric and gas, and if the law makes a distinction between the two, it's important for the finder of fact to know that there are two competing technologies out there.
Take it to a simpler level.
Okay.
We have unobjected testimony from the deputies that said it was a cell phone. We have an adopted admission by the defendant who was confronted by Deputy Ragland when he was asked where he got the cell phone. And he didn't say, it's not a cell phone. He said, it's mine.
Mm-hmm.
That, to me, is enough to prove, or at least to support the judge's conclusion, that it was, in fact, in the absence of any other evidence, a cell phone.
Well, Judge Petty, no. And the reason why is that occasionally items take on colloquial meanings that don't necessarily mean the underlying technology. When I had a cut on my hand, I put on a Band-Aid. Now, I didn't look to make sure that was a Johnson & Johnson brand bandage. I put on a Band-Aid thinking that it was a bandage. There are many times where things, you know, become colloquial in terms, but don't meet the state definition.
But if this were a pager, mm-hmm. you'd expect the defendant to say, that's not a cell phone, it's just a pager.
Yeah, but what if it was a Wi-Fi-only telephone? I think he would still call that a cell phone. What if it was a satellite phone? I think he would still call it a cell phone.
So
what if
it was? He's using the term probably the same way the General Assembly used the term in writing the statute.
Well, that's what I initially...
Common, ordinary... meaning of the term.
That's what I initially thought until the General Assembly changed the law between the time he was arrested and the time he went to trial.
Yes, that was to cover the pager.
Well, let me follow up on Judge Petty's simplification and offer this. A walkie-talkie is a communication device. It's mm-hmm. not a cell phone. I think mm-hmm. we can agree on that. And prior to the amended, I think today it would be covered. You couldn't bring a walkie-talkie into a correctional facility today. You probably could do it because it wasn't prohibited back when your client was mm-hmm. charged. The walkie-talkie wasn't prohibited, the cell phone was. Why do you need what amounts to expert technology, the court taking judicial notice of the Federal Communications Commission distinction between a walkie-talkie and a cell phone to determine simply if a device that's in common usage, and both of them are. I mean, I think I can recognize the difference between a walkie-talkie and a, mm-hmm. and a cell phone. Why do you need the help of the Federal Communications Commission to draw that distinction?
Well, because the underlying technology is not inherently obvious, and that's why I wanted to present it.
But who cares? We know they're both communications devices.
Well, for the same reason.
But one of them I can make phone calls on. The other I can only talk directly to another unit by pressing a button.
Yeah.
Well, and I understand that. I don't understand necessarily what the frequency is. You know, mm-hmm. the FCC probably could tell me what frequencies they each operate on, but do I need to know that? Do I need to know how many transistors or processors are, or what the how many gigabytes of memory are in the particular cell phone in order to classify it as a cell phone?
Yes, you as the finer fact need to know that there's competing technologies out there, just the same way that you need to know as a finer fact that there are different types of intoxicating drugs out there. Some are legal, some are illegal. And that's why in drug cases we have to have state lab do an analysis to say this white powder is in fact illegal or this white powder is not.
Is there a significant difference between an object that a trier of fact, a juror, for instance, could look at and identify, such as a iPhone, mm-hmm. and a white powder in a bag? I mean, you need an expert to tell you what the white powder is, because jurors, using their common sense and everyday knowledge, don't know. But you don't need an expert to tell you what a cell phone is, because jurors are perfectly capable of reaching that conclusion on their own using that same common sense and everyday knowledge.
Well, Judge Petty, that's exactly the reason why I need to have my FCC evidence and put into evidence, because otherwise people will assume that which they don't know. They would assume, I know it when I see it. And I'm offering evidence to say, no, it's not when you know it, you see it. There's many different technologies out there that are not cellular-based.
Did that FCC document establish that this was not a wireless cellular device?
No, it established that there's wireless telecommunications technology out there that I wanted to argue and did argue with other evidence, you know, that it's easy to confuse. And laws are strictly construed against the Commonwealth. This is a statutory term. And if the finder of fact doesn't know that there's alternate technology out there, they would come to exactly the common sense conclusion that you're coming to without the proper information to know that they could be mistaken. So that's the only issue.
Excuse me, counsel. Let me advise you. You have less than a minute remaining on your rebuttal time. You have been peppered with questions. I'm going to give you a little extra if you want to save it, or what would you you'd like to do.
Okay, let me save for the bottom.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Thank you,
sir.
Your Honors.
Good morning. I'm Benjamin Katz, appearing on behalf of the Commonwealth.
Good morning again, Mr. Katz.
Thank you, Your Honor. I think the starting point for this analysis has to be the testimony of Gregory and Mowbray that the device is a cellular telephone that comes in without objection. There's no challenge to the admissibility of that testimony. And let me also begin by saying competent counsel, constitutionally effective counsel, can defend this case any number of ways, but an option at that point when that testimony was offered would have been to voir dire those witnesses with this FCC document and to establish that they weren't in a position to make that testimony, but that wasn't done. This testimony comes in before the court. It's at 22, 32, 43, and 44 of the appendix, that it's a cellular device. And so at that point, the fact that other technology exists is immaterial. The evidence before the court is that this is a cellular telephone. And pursuant to the statute that permits the court to take judicial notice of these things, it simply wasn't necessary to admit that evidence.
Up until Armstrong and some of the other cases that have come out, I would have bet my bottom dollar that I could identify a gun if shown to me as being a firearm. But apparently now you have to bring in testimony that the gun is capable of firing a projectile by the explosion of gases or whatever the definition is. Why isn't this the same situation that you can look at it and say, I think it's a gun, but somebody has to testify that it's actually a firearm under the statute?
Well, and to make the analogy complete, the testimony in this case is as if they said, this is a firearm that is capable of firing a projectile by means of an explosion. And that the testimony on its face is totally competent to support a conviction under the statute. The suggestion that there may be other technology out there doesn't attack that positive evidence before the trial court that's been unimpeached. So it is as if they have said this is a cellular telephone. It's as if all of the necessary evidence to prove a firearm has come in at that point. And there's no suggestion to the contrary to attack their testimony.
Well, they didn't put the actual phone into evidence for some reason. They only used photographs, which I think is a little unfortunate because, obviously, to put the phone into evidence, you could turn it on right now and see if it connects to a cellular network. And, you know, we'd have the definition from Oxford right there, and we could find out if it fits that definition. But we don't have that, and I think that's one of Mr. Alvin's points. So given that, but we do have the photographs, and as Judge Petty's just pointed out, one of those photographs, if you look closely, it does indicate that it's connected to the Verizon network for whatever that's worth. I mean, can to the extent to which an ordinary, you know, citizen who, I think we can all agree cell phones are ubiquitous, and there's only, you know, there's a limited number of major carriers, and I think of maybe a dozen small carriers that you can go to Walmart, I guess, and get a phone these days too. So, in any event, I mean, you know, is it you know it when you see it good enough? I think that's what this case really boils down to. And Mr. Alvin's argument is that it's not.
Well, and I think my response to that is that this didn't happen in a vacuum, as Judge Petty, your question pointed out. I mean, there is both the photograph that indicates that it is connected to the Verizon network, but there's also the admission by adoption of the defendant's reaction when it's found. It's the fact that he secreted it in a bag. It's the fact that he initially lied about the circumstances requiring him to bring it there, that he said his employer wouldn't allow him to keep it at his place of employment. And when he was questioned about the irrationality of that proposal, he said, well, you got me. So it's not simply the court looking at a photograph and concluding this is a cell phone. It's driven by the totality of the evidence adduced. But moreover, you have the fact finder explicitly saying, I don't need somebody to tell me when a car is a car for purposes of motor vehicle statutes, and I find that this is similar, and I would submit that that finding's not plainly wrong, and it's not without evidence and support. But more importantly, for purposes of appeal, what you have in this case is a hypothesis of innocence, that this was some device other than phone. And I would submit, as I pointed out on brief, that there's absolutely no evidence in the record to support that. The only evidence in the record, if it should have been admitted, is the fact that other technology exists. But that says nothing about the particular device at issue here. And so I would submit that clearly the trial court was not in error for making the factual finding that it did. It was supported by the evidence.
Is there any definition, to your knowledge, in the Code of Virginia of a cell phone?
Not that I'm aware of.
So we would have to rely on, I guess, the common meaning of the term when we try to determine what the General Assembly intended to cover.
Well, I would submit that it's not necessary to get to the point where you're construing the language. The language is plain on its face. It's not necessary to go to the next step and divine, well, what was the intent of the legislature?
When the legislature amended the statute, they obviously recognized that there was another type, some other type of wireless communication device other than a cell phone.
Well, I think the reasonable inference that you could draw from the amendment is that they sought to broaden the application of the statute, to do nothing about cell phones, which were already prohibited, but to expand its reach to other devices. And so I don't know that the amendment of the statute would necessarily cause this court to construe what was meant earlier. I think it would be appropriate to construe what the amendment does as to the broadening effect.
Well, we're going outside the record, but I happen to know that, for example, a satellite phone is not a cellular phone. It connects directly to a satellite. It doesn't connect to a cell. You go from place to place. You get handed off from one cell to another as you're driving down the highway. But with a satellite phone, you're connected to whatever satellite's directly overhead, and you go anywhere in the hemisphere, and you're connected to the same satellite at all times. So previously, that phone, had it been brought into a correctional institution, would not have been covered, it would seem to me. Now it is with the amendment. I think that's an example of what the General Assembly was trying to do. There's technology coming along, and I guess cellular phone was not sufficiently broad to cover. I mean, it might have been broad enough back in the 1990s. It's not broad enough to cover, the technology that's emerging or has emerged more recently.
But I still maintain, in the absence of some evidence in the record that suggests this was not a cell phone, notwithstanding the testimony of Gregory and Mowbray that it was, the court need not engage in that matter of analysis. We're simply not at the point where there has been enough evidence to support a hypothesis of innocence other than the imagination of defense counsel, and clearly that's not appropriate.
What about the argument that he didn't possess a cell phone during a period of incarceration?
Again, that is a hypothesis of innocence that is not supported by the factual record viewed in the light most favorable to the Commonwealth. We've got testimony from the coordinator of the work release program that cell phones are never permitted in the facility. So to the extent that that argument depends on the notion, well, there was this locker room and items that were required for work release could be accessed in this locker room, I would submit that the evidence demonstrates that cell phones are never permitted in the locker room.
Well, I don't want to make Mr. Roblin's argument for him. He doesn't have a lot of time left, so maybe I will make it for him, and you can respond to it. But I suspect what he would argue is that the statute doesn't criminalize bringing a cell phone onto the property of a correctional institution. It says bringing a cell phone into a correctional institution. So the question, I guess, for our purposes, is it enough that you have a door to your rear, or does it require more and you actually be in the portion of the correctional institution where prisoners are kept for some period of time? What did the General Assembly mean by that, I guess?
Well, Your Honor, I believe the testimony that came out at the proceeding was that cell phones were not permitted in the facility at all, beginning at the primary door leading into the initial entry area, and that's at 35 of the Joint Appendix.
But the sheriff can't adopt rules that change the plain meaning of the statute.
Well, I don't think it does change. I would not agree that it changes. If the statute prohibits...
The sheriff can't say they're not permitted within 100 yards of my facility and then charge someone who had it outside the facility within that 100 yards if the statute clearly says otherwise.
Well, I would submit that that is a faithful interpretation of the statute, that not permitting a detainee, an inmate of a state or local correctional facility to have a cell phone begins at the entrance to the facility, and it does not require a reworking of what the legislature prohibited. It's simply the effect of that sheriff's authorization. You're not bringing it in the door. That's the testimony here. That was the evidence before the fact finder. And moreover, even if we accept the notion that there is this locker room in which certain items may be accessed that are necessary for work release, this factual record doesn't support the fact that this particular defendant was permitted to have that phone in that location. As an initial matter, if you take him at his word, his employer didn't want him to have a cell phone in the facility, that he couldn't keep it at Martin's. And so you'd have to square that with the later position, well, I'm allowed to have it, I have to have it at the facility. We have the testimony of the director of the work release program who said, no, that, you know, unless your employer works out some plan, you're not having it here. And there's certainly no testimony that a plan was worked out for this particular defendant. So even if we accepted the notion that there was a permissible area inside the facility that you wouldn't run afoul of the statute, those are not these facts. That's not supported by this record.
But the statute, I mean, we've been talking about in or out of the facility, but the statute actually doesn't use that term. The statute uses the term during the period of incarceration, which is open to a little interpretation when you have someone on work release. I mean, is when he is at work, is that during the period of his incarceration?
Well, I would submit that, to my recollection, the factual record demonstrates that upon entry of the facility, you are back during the period of your incarceration, and that to the extent that you need clothing to allow you to go to your work release program, that's the sort of thing that would be kept in the locker room. But that's not this. That's not a cellular telephone. And so if the argument is, well, until I went back through the door, back through the locker room, I was not in custody, I don't think the factual record would support that proposition.
Well, does this indicate that there's, did the record indicate that there's any period of time specified as to when he is allowed to leave and when he is required to return?
Sadly, I think there was a paucity of evidence in that regard, and it certainly would be helpful in resolving
this. Wouldn't that be the period of incarceration, the period between when he is required to return and the period and the time the next day when he's allowed to leave? Wouldn't that be the period of incarceration?
Well, I suppose an argument could be made that you're still subject to the same rules and regulations when you're on work release, unless it's modified to a certain extent. You know, for instance, you're not allowed to have visits with certain unauthorized people when you're on work release. So those rules would continue to convey when you're outside the facility. You're still incarcerated. You're still subject to
work release seems to imply that you're not incarcerated. You're released, however temporarily. Now you have to come back, you know, and you know, Judge Pettit, I think, raises a great point, during the period of incarceration. Well, I mean, you could certainly, fact finders can draw reasonable inferences, and but if you show up, for example, suppose you have to report back to the jail by, 6 o'clock in the evening after a day's work, and you show up at 5:55, you're not required to be there. Does that mean you can bring the cell phone into the institution, at 5:55, but you can't have it there at 6 o'clock?
Well, I think what I would say generally is Your Honor has put your finger on an area that is ripe for parsing. There's certainly many different interpretations we could make. But I would respond, these were not made to the trial court. The trial court didn't have an opportunity to weigh at what point incarceration begins, at what point does it end, and where is the middle. And so I can argue to you now in the first instance my belief, but the fact finder didn't have that opportunity. And based on the evidence before the fact finder, I would submit that its conclusion in that regard is not plainly wrong. I'm happy to answer.
We've beaten this. Yeah.
Any other questions? Thank you, Mr. Katz.
Dennis Rawls was going to tell me I didn't make a very good argument on this.
No. It's clear, Your Honors, I understand the argument. I'm not going to belabor the point. I just want to rise just to touch on the third error, which I think you really would be doing a service to the bar and the bench if you were to decide that and issue a ruling that government websites are self-authenticating. If you come up with that rule, that would...
Even if they've been hacked.
What's this?
Even if they've been hacked.
Well, it's easy to go from the bench, online, if you're given a website
address. It's a pretty hot potato these days, it seems to me.
Well, it seems to work in the federal government, which I understand.
I don't think much works in the federal government. I mean, I hate to agree with the trial court in that regard, but there's a lot to be said for, finding some of the things that wind up on government. We've had instances, obviously. I mean,
yes.
In all seriousness, websites have been hacked, and stuff appears on government websites that's not, not accurate. Obviously governmental information. Now, whether that would ever be used in court is another story, I suppose.
Well, it does come up all the time, and I ask you to look at Williams v. Long, and perhaps you'd consider making that.
One quick question. I know you're running out of time. Just to clarify, this question about the period of incarceration versus physically being within the facility. I understood your argument, and correct me if I'm wrong, to the trial court that he was not yet physically within the facility, therefore it was not during his period of incarceration.
That's correct. My argument is that not until he passes the locker room and he's in the housing unit is he in the jail. And I rationalize that by the basis that there's a locker room, and the testimony showed that there are things that are not allowed to be in the jail that are allowed to be in the locker room. And so if you're at that point prior to passing the locker room, you're not incarcerated.
Your argument is that he's not incarcerated until the key turns.
That's my argument. Unless there are any other questions.
Are there any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.